My guest on Podcasting Softly this morning is the New York filmmaker. He's a writer, director, producer, actor, cinematographer, Ron Bonk, with some of these real... I mean, the titles are just fantastic. What a Deal, City of the Vampires, Permanent Wave, I've Killed Before, The Vicious Suite, Gut Pile, Bizarre Lust of a Sexual Deviant, Clay, Blood-Sucking Redneck Vampires, Peter Rottentail, Inbred Redneck Alien Abduction, Terror at Blood Fart Lake, The Last House on Hell Street, Empire State of Dead, Mrs. Cannibal Holocaust, She Kills, Night, The Night of Something Strange. Man, what a list. And that's not all of them either.
A number of those I just produced.
Yeah, I realize.
Some I produced a little more hands-on, and then a few of those I directed.
Definitely got a interesting career.
Yeah, I tried to sort of broad spectrum it with some of the ones you've produced, some of the ones you've written, some of the ones you've directed. Yeah, really, as they would say, an eclectic mix.
Sure.
So, I guess, as they say in the beginning, what did little Ronnie Bonk, did you always want to be in the picture business?
When did I want to be like him?
Yeah.
I grew up, I fell in love with the movie, but after seeing Dawn of the Dead, I started considering, like, hey, I'd like to make my own movies. But before the little kid, I'd already... They were like rip off Jaws and Star Wars and Alien. Those are the three, you know, I remember playing like all summer long with the neighbors. And I'd make up my short with different, either like Jaws, different monsters or different animals that were attacking us and stuff. And so I always was working out the, story idea to play with the friends, but I hadn't really considered being a filmmaker.
Right.
Back in the late 70s, mid to late 70s, seemed like something you had to go out to Hollywood for really good. As I got older, I was aware that films being made in other parts of my New York City, which was far away, but, everything, that I looked into, it just was, you had to go to film school, and it was extremely expensive, and you need to raise money in the studio to make these movies, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars. Shoot something on my own, millimeter was the only way to go, and it was a minimum of $100,000, and I started considering shooting on consumer videos, even, Super 8 or 8 millimeter still seemed pretty daunting and expensive, but I, anyone who I talked to about it seemed that it was a viable option, that there was nothing being released like that. But as I did my research, I found out that, there was a whole market of consumer brand, especially, there was the professional brand video cameras like Betacam, 1-inch stuff that before made them, but there was guys making movies and releasing them that they shot on VHS, and they were making for thousands of dollars. I could raise, if I worked part of the year, I could take that money and use it to make a movie. It wasn't like I had to raise $100,000. I could raise $2,000. I invented the camera, video editing system. Basically, I was going like camera to back, but I invented a video coder system. I spent thousands of dollars on it. All it was to do for me was the money I spent. It was make the end credits of the movie. It was and a couple other little effects I needed, like I had a camera to deck up, shoot these movies. I would have to time out the edits from the camera to the VCRs by doing like the countdown, and eventually got my first work on that. The What a Deal was instructional, it was a pretty simple edit, but it was a piece. So it had more like, smaller edits or tighter edits stuff and quicker cuts. And that was a little more involved because I'm you grew up in early that time about right. That was what, 1993. Decided I would have a go at it. I was just wrapping up college. Didn't want to go and spend more money to go to college. It finally hit me. I was like, I should have been a filmmaker. I got an accounting degree. I got a criminal justice degree. Wasn't really excited about doing either one of them. Was just doing them because, the indication was those were, good employment opportunity money, and I was like, I should be making movies. That's what I always dreamed of doing, and I wouldn't have to go to film school, and I wouldn't have to raise $100,000. I could do it on my own, be my own boss, and make the movies I wanted to make. So 92 here, that's how it's all come to be.
Wow. In the early years, I mean, obviously there would have been a lot of trial and error as they're off. What were the, what was the sort of, getting it up from the ground roots like? Was it, was it a great struggle, or did you find it came naturally in some instances? Or?
And those had come out pretty well. And I showed friends. And I shot some of them while I was taking like a school, and I showed classmates. Part of me thought I had been watching movies, studying movies. I felt out the instructional videos sold real well. I mean, it was very kind of looking at it, but it was well received. And then when it cuts apart, trying to do a full feature to handle every single aspect of it, the movie was just a wreck. Like, I was making super, like, dumb mistakes that were very basic filmmaking 101. And I mean, definitely shook my confidence a lot, but I was determined to be a filmmaker to make the next better. And if it wasn't better, if I didn't show, you know, a huge improvement, then I was going to get out of filmmaking. And I ended up shooting technology. And each segment was kind of different. I shot the first segment, cut it together. It was all kind of long, and it was almost an hour. But it was, you know, I was a lot happier. And I was like, okay, this, you know, City of Amber, do this one, you know, gave a better indication. And I'm cutting it down. That was permanent with you, which, you know, I never fit anthology because I got back to work on another feature. And then when I came back to the anthology, I took the next step. Turned into Strawberry Taste, with its own feature. But yeah, I mean, it was being on those early sets. I think it was Jerry O'Sullivan who first this is like our film school. Jerry, the director of Cup Island, he produced my early work, and he was right. I mean, we were going out there, and making these movies. And the difference was, is I wasn't just showing friends and parents in my closet somewhere. I was reading them. Really learned just, I learned some with What a Deal, but it was a different market selling direct to the library. They're a lot more forgiving of special interest, you know, professional videos. But a feature that's pretty harsh on it. But it showed me how to get out there in the market, how the buyers were. It showed me what needed to be done, you know, to make a kind of it. Amongst you know, the films that were being made, the movie shot on film, and with these projects, I continue to learn more. I still feel like I'm in film school. I'm still learning. It's not like I'm shooting movies nonstop, or I'm taking, you know, like an intensive, you know, semester at film college. You know, sometimes I try to shoot something every year, but sometimes it's just actual production, and so I'm always trying stuff that. I'm not in a situation where I could be shooting every single, you know, weekend and putting stuff up on YouTube because it takes me a while to finish some features. You know, if I'm shooting other stuff, features are being neglected, or I have to do the, you know, distribution.
Even I feel with the streaming services, I don't know if you feel the same way, but as much as is on there, it's still kind of limited in some ways. I mean, you can't find everything there.
Yeah, I mean, there's not one service. You really do have to look around.
Yeah.
Netflix can be pretty diverse, but then it'll be pretty diverse with, like, every zombie movie that seems to be out there, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Vimeo, if you search around, but sometimes it's a little hard to find stuff on there, you know, you'll find a lot of indies are on there because it's they control their own stations, and it's not too expensive to do it on there. But yeah, I mean, but you gotta search, and it's not always easy to find it. You gotta know where to search because it doesn't come up in the search engine, you know.
I think it was easier back in the day, mate, to be honest. You went to the video store and it was all there.
It was definitely less complicated, but
yeah.
It wasn't always easier. Sometimes, you know, you get a video store chain or a small chain or single store that pick up every indie movie and knew that's what also would keep them alive.
Yeah.
You know, everyone was carrying the Hollywood stuff, so... What would get them people over to their stores after, you know, instead of, say, going to the closer store that had, you know, all the Hollywood movies, well, they had something different, you know. But nowadays, it's you know, there's a lot more options for the movies, but there's a lot more filmmakers. And even though, you know, you can get your movie list on Amazon, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to pop in front of, you know, everybody's faces. You have to do extra work for it. So
mm-hmm.
It's more complicated, you know, as much as it's easier, so.
Yeah. Obviously, with the technology going the way it has, anyone can make a film. But, I mean, Harrison Ellenshaw that had a great quote once. He said that Shakespeare never had a word processor, but now that we have word processors, there are no Shakespeare. So,
good point, yeah.
You know, so I think there's still a line. As much as there is all this technology, and one can very easily go out and make a film, the difference between making a film and telling a really good story on film are still two different things.
For sure, yeah.
So,
I think what a good movie is nowadays, the line's been blurred. There's movies that are celebrated on every level, from Hollywood to indie. And I'll just be like, growing up in the 70s and 80s with the critics there, and I didn't always agree with the critics. They were too hard on stuff. But, I mean, you could see the craft of filmmaking has been diluted because you have a lot of people, like myself included, who didn't go to film school. And some don't go to film school and are geniuses, and some didn't go to film school and their stuff is horrible, but they have a concept that people like. Or some movies that are just like nonstop gore that I see some of the fans latch onto. I'll be like, the filmmaker's sound, this is horrible. Everything's poorly framed, acting's horrible, dialogue's horrible. The shots, they're all wrong, but people love it just because it has a bunch of extreme gore in it. So, but whatever people enjoy, they enjoy. You just got to find your audience.
That's true. And, I suppose a lot of it today, because, you're in all the different areas. A lot of it is marketing, too, yeah?
Sure, yes, definitely. Especially when you're trying to get out to larger audiences.
As much as you can make a good product, if you can't get it out there or find or the platform to launch it or whatever.
There's a lot of good product that does get lost, or the filmmakers just are not... salespeople, and they never cut the deal to get it out there. They don't want to cut the deal because they're afraid to get ripped off, and their movie ends up buried and never seen again. And there's bad movies that the guys are great at marketing, and the movie's all over the place. One thing I found though from picking up movies is some movies just don't catch on. You can do the same marketing strategy for a movie, and if it doesn't have the concept that fans want to see and it's not well made, it won't work. So you can't necessarily do what somebody else, you can't do what I did say with She Kills, because She Kills is a very specific, grindsploitation homage with, a general horror movie and expect it to do as well as She Kills did. So my rules, don't necessarily apply. I can give you strategy ideas, but it doesn't mean it'll work for your movie, So you got to have that good movie that's well made and with the concept that that people are interested, and then you can go out maybe and do some ads and see some mainstream crossover success with it.
Just one more question regarding that. Are you, as a man who's in all the different areas, the directing, producing, writing, do you find yourself, are you conscious of the trends? Do you try and go with what's trendy, or are you always just doing your own thing?
Sometimes when I'm trying to plot out movies, I've looked at what the trends are.
For instance, with House Shark, were you trying to jump on the shark exploitation bandwagon, or?
No, not really. The thing was, I've always had wanted to do a shark movie at Jaws, and had thought about how we'd do it for years, and he'd even, as I've developed as a filmmaker, and the projects have gotten bigger, had thought more and more about how we'd do one. And make it look like it was the ocean and shoot it out in the water. Yes, for it. Mm-hmm. When I hit on the idea of doing House Shark, I was like, oh my God, I can do the shark movie I always wanted to do. And I can do it, at a fraction of the cost and a fraction of the hassles and headaches. And finally do that. It just timed out that shark movies were popular, because of Sharknado and stuff. So it was timing, but I didn't go, well, shark movies are popular. What shark concept can I come up with? It was the opposite.
Yeah.
So, and with all my movies, I didn't make She Kills. I made She Kills years after the Grindhouse ideas had sort of saturated the market and the Grindhouse movies were down, because I'd always wanted to make a Grindhouse homage and finally had a reason to do it, it's not based on trends. But when I'm looking for movies to distribute, sometimes pick up a movie that's not as good as another movie because I know trend-wise it'd be a good seller.
So you personally, as the artist, you just go with it. The opportunity there to make it, you make it. But
whatever story I want to tell next, I'll be like, this is the story I want to tell. There might be a better concept but that story's not fully realized in my head yet, you know, or I'm just not as excited about doing it because, I don't know, it's like the last project or it's something I'm just not in the mood to make. Like, I don't want to, I'm burned out on doing the horror comedy stuff with She Kills the House Sharks. I want to do a serious, you know, movie with the next one. So the next one will be, you know, a lot darker, to be kind of a return more to my, you know, earlier roots of movies, at least subject matter wise.
Right. Well, anyway, Ron, like I said before, mate, I hope you keep going. I love the stuff you're doing. All the success.
Thank you.
All the success in the world. I can't wait to see House Shark all the way through. I've not seen the whole thing. So I don't know how we'll get it over here. Will it come out on DVD or?
Oh, eventually, yeah. I'm trying to get it. It wasn't 100% done when we did the premiere, so I'm trying to get that wrapped up and then see which film festivals are interested in showing it. I don't know if I'll submit to too many. I might just wait and see if any ask to see it and want to show it. And then I'll start lining up the VOD and the limited edition releases for like late winter, early spring, and then the wide release right just short of summer.
Awesome.
So, and you know, even if it's not directly being distributed, you know, overseas or in your country, for anyone listening, you know, you could always buy it off the site or Amazon or elsewhere and get it imported. So there'll be chances to see it for sure.
Awesome. Well, mate, it's been great to talk to you. I think you're a really cool guy, really cool filmmaker. Keep up the good work, and we'll see you in the movies.
We will. Thank you.
All right, mate. Thanks.